Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
All right, welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Smith.
And I'm Sia Yasotornra.
And we have a very special episode tonight. We've got a whole crew here of people, and Sia's got the subject line. I don't even know what we're all going to be talking about, but if we could go around the table and have everyone introduce themselves. Or no, you need to introduce yourself first, Sia. Oh, you did.
How many glasses of wine have we had tonight?
There's been some wine involved. All right, Leslie.
Hey guys, this is Leslie Flores here with Moments by Design. So we are a party in a box concept, just making your life a lot easier and a lot more fun.
It's Mike Flores here from Moments by Design. I'm the chief technical officer.
CTOs, Adam.
Oh Lord, I am fractional CTO of an airline company.
And your name is?
And it's Adam or Jax, depending on what you feel like for the day, which I'm good with both. And then also next to me.
And I'm Kirk Kelly, CEO of a company called Accelerated Technology Consulting. And we work with startups all the way up to established businesses to help them with any of their business challenges to grow to the next level or to get off the ground.
And you'll need to make sure you go to our Facebook page because we're going to have pictures of Moments by Design. They'll be ready to launch January.
Yep, you got it. 2019.
And
I think we'll also have video as well.
Okay.
Oh,
so you get to see some of their products. If you're thinking about putting a get together on and you are like get together challenged, decorating challenged, I should say, this is going to be the company you want to check out.
Yes. And Leslie has been gracious to sponsor tonight's event. So thank you for the decorations, the food and the wine. And it's delicious.
Always, guys.
Yeah. You turn the house into like an amazing place. So I will agree.
So, okay, so jumping in here, the concept of tonight was really, we wanted happy hour, and we thought, well, how do we make it productive? So, Adam was gracious enough to open up his abode for us, and we thought,
hashtag hustle.
Hashtag hustle.
Hashtag innovation, hashtag hustle.
Hashtag entrepreneur life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're trying to get as many buzzwords into this one as possible.
And that's your job tonight.
Okay.
Great. So we have no specific topic tonight. It's more of a conversation roundtable, whatever goes and flows. So this is going to be an interesting direction for us at Innovation Calling because we typically have much more of a focused discussion one-on-one. So let's have some fun. So first topic for this evening.
Wait. And I got to also say this is way better than where we normally are because we can actually take photos and we can actually do whatever we want.
That is true. That is true.
You get in trouble for photos, apparently.
Where?
Oh, yeah.
Where we like to drink.
Oh, at the Cowboys Club. Okay. I was like, where have we got in trouble with? What are you guys doing where you're getting in trouble with photos? That sounds like bad.
There's always
not
a story
doing anything illegal or everyone's.
It's nothing illegal. It's just that they don't necessarily like us taking photography.
Right.
Well, if you've seen the pictures I take, it's probably smart of them to be considerate of us not to take pictures.
All right. So, Sia, what's your topic?
Wow. There's like so many things to talk about. So, the first one that struck me recently in the news, because all of us are business corporate travelers, I'm sure we all have a Marriott account.
100%.
So, yep. 500 million
Marriott accounts
have been hacked. And now the question is well, it's supposed to be the largest data breach in corporate history. So what are your guys' thoughts on that?
Nervous. I've exclusively been with Marriott since 2006 and have stayed with them more nights than I care to remember over those years. And at one point in time called them my second home and would refuse for them to tell me thank you for your status with us because that told me how much I was with them and not at my house. It is a concern to a degree, but I think that that's something that we're going to continue to see as a trend over time that we've already started seeing. Now, what do they do with the data? They get to know how many nights I've stayed with them. They get to know my point status potentially. But beyond that, I don't know. That's where I get a little, maybe, maybe not.
Right. So, you know, Kurt, so you bring up a point. What exactly got taken, though? What data was actually retrieved from, you know, those databases? If it was just simply a number of stays, I don't give crap about it, right? So
address. And then you give them your address. Here's
the question I have is nobody ever, like, I don't know if anybody brought this up, but it's not just Marriott anymore. It's SPG.
Exactly.
So that was actually
where it got taken from, was the Starwood Preferred Group. So because Marriott acquired SPG a couple of years ago, right. And it was actually the SPG account that was hacked. And so my understanding is that they actually gained your name, your address, your date of birth, and probably, yes, my SPG like status. So, I mean, what they're able to do with that, not really sure. It'll probably be a lot of phishing kind of campaigns is what I would assume.
And here's the other thing is with SPG, and it depends on how bonkers you went with SPG, because I've been loyal for both. Like, I love my SPG hotels over Marriott.
100%.
just because, oh my God, Aloft and a few other places I can go nuts about. But the other thing I have a question about is on some of the other stuff, like how far deep did it go? Because I also have my American Airlines rewards account
tied to it
and all sorts of other stuff tied to it. So where, what's its, and how many back doors did they get into? And then once they get to American Airlines, then it's getting even scarier because then my TSA and global entry gets tied to it.
And that was one of the things they actually did say, that the passports were actually part of it. So your passport numbers. Yeah. So yes, so you're completely 100% right. So many of you, you know, yes, like,
oh man,
like I do.
Kurt just showed us his credit card.
Yep, Marriott credit cards, exactly. So I mean, because I mean, let's face it, in the day that we live in today, convenience is key. So we all have everything, remember our passwords, remember all of our TSA, all of our global entries. I mean, so yeah, I think these guys could have made out with some really credible kind of information, especially my passwords. I mean, my credit cards, I have pretty much all of my passwords remembered, all of my accounts, because I don't want to deal with putting them back in and taking them out of my wallet and trying to fish for them. So yeah.
They'll fish for you.
Well, even
they
just
did
your,
fish for us.
But even your email and your password, because it's like, if you find out my email and password, you've got a good chance of getting into about 50% of my accounts at least, because that's, I make it easy.
This is why
all of us do.
Right, exactly.
That's why LastPass is awesome, but we all do the same thing. Even I work as fractional CTO and I have to do a lot of data security stuff on a regular basis, but I'll be honest, I'm just as guilty. I just introduced Rachel to hackers and that's also the same thing.
Like, what's hackers?
1980s movie.
Oh, great movie.
Oh, hackers. Oh,
hackers. The A's.
Yeah, it was, that's a classic. Mean, phenomenal movie, but, and it's a classic movie, but the thing is we're just as bad now as we were then. And there's not much difference, although, yeah, anyways, but we can go.
You know, the scary part about it that I think about from like a cybersecurity standpoint is when you forget your password and you have to recover your password through other means, like, okay, what was your home address? What's your dog's name? Stuff like that. They start getting that kind of information. It's not about that they got your password, is they can get around it by calling the place and saying, hey, you know what? I forgot my password, but I can answer your secret questions now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because AT&T. Your secret questions are all about your most common things that you have stored. So they put enough information together around you, you can get around people's passwords. And that's the scary part.
Well, and the right. AT&T breach, that was the scariest one, right? To where the girl, like, sit there and like had the fake crying baby in the background and she kind of got through the and changed the password. But the other thing I will say is the two-factor is just as nutty too, right? So I love putting two-factor on everything and I do the Google app with the Google Authenticator, which is basically an rotating RSA key and it's great. But then I had a huge iPhone issue and I had to go get my iPhone replaced because my iPhone literally, of all random things, the cellular chip in iPhone 7s is a known issue and it will die. And so you have to go get your iPhone wholly replaced. They'll either replace the logic board on your phone. So you have to go lose your phone for 2 weeks, which good Lord, none of us can live without our phone without your phone for 2 weeks. Or they'll just replace your phone whole part. The other problem is I encrypted my data backup, which then I couldn't remember the password for that one of all random things that happened to me. So I couldn't even restore my backup, which then that was a cluster of mess. So now I have two-factor authentication, which I have the key stored somewhere else, which is another mess. So now even if I have two-factor authentication and all other stuff, it's still not, is it worth it? Is it not worth it? How do I get back into it? What's going to happen with all of that stuff? How do I get past it? Everything else. So even though you can do two-factor, is it worth it?
Yeah, from my perspective, I don't know. I mean, when you think about, you know, adding layers of security, right? You're like, I'm going to hide the key in the basket, and I'm going to hide one in the tree around the corner, right? And then you forget about the one around the corner sometimes. Yeah, so it gets harder. You put a lot more onus on yourself, and you set yourself up probably for more back doors and keyholes and ways. The way I think about it, like in your normal home, right? Most people just have a standard router, and I'm not a hacker, but I bet I could get through most people's router home walls, you know, with not much effort, you know, just because I've messed with them enough and it's kind of a hobby.
Yeah.
And so I set up a little different one, you know, just to get around it. But, you know, I can Google online what the most common password is or the basic password is for every router out there because people forget them, you have to reset them, and most people don't change them.
Password 1, 2, 3 all the time. It's like the most common, right?
Right. I do that with most everybody. Like even when I go over to most friends' houses and they have the standard thing, like I hit a couple of friends' houses, like they're like, oh yeah, it's whatever this like standard whatever is and this, that, and the other. And so, I mean, like you and I are the same way where this house is definitely not wired normally at all by any stretch of the imagination. I have actual commercial grade Meraki stuff in this house. And so the network Wi-Fi is all mesh network and everything else. But I am by no stretch of the imagination a normal person. I'm the 1%.
You're like less than 1%, even in the industry. I mean, yeah. I like to make fun of my boyfriend because we're both former security people, and I'll say it. We have some sonic wall in the house, so try to go ahead and break into us. It's fine.
No, the best story is Sean blocks Sia from certain websites. Like, wasn't it Perez Hilton? Like, you could only be on Perez Hilton for, like, 5 seconds or something before it shut off.
God, that was years ago. No,
yeah. We've upgraded since then.
The most recent is like, you know, gaming, right? So it's the ports, like, these apps, like, all run through, and it bypasses, right? Because you have to keep those ports open in order to get those game applications to run through. Well, they don't do scanning through those. You have to open it up, and you get potentially exposed to it. So in the beginning, you know, thank God it weaned me off Farmville back in the day. No, I have not touched that in a while. Wow. I fully concede I was a Farmviller in the beginning, but whatever.
Weren't you like a Candy Crush?
I still am. Back off.
Okay.
Well, and see, what's don't even worse is now that 5G is coming, like we can get around our Wi-Fi because we're just on cellular network and unlimited data.
Yes, exactly. And the quality, knock on wood, should be better. Which Sean, is really, you know what cracks me up is?
Doesn't fry your brain.
Oh, yeah. So explain this, Aaron, because that's legit. I feel like this is legit.
I don't have any proof behind it. Like, somebody told me this, so I don't know if it's true.
Right.
But Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, and again, this is, somebody can verify this. We probably should verify it. But both lived in a building, either were close to a building or lived in a building that was 5G.
Well, and then there was the third person too. There's always three.
Yeah, there's always
three. I don't know who the third person. I just know those two.
There was somebody else.
Because those two committed suicide.
No, but I agree. And then there was somebody else, but that was
But it scrambled. It could potentially scramble your brain a little bit.
Yeah, they both did it in the same way within like a week and a half of each other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, the interesting thing is when you look about new technologies just in general, they're always scary because it takes, and this is the hard part about most of them, is it takes a long time to understand their effects. So you put 4G out there, 5G out there, it'll be 10 years before you know that there is a long-term change that's happening, right? That it's, I don't know, it's increasing the cancer rate or it's increasing some mutation of a gene, whatever the case may be.
Right.
It takes time.
No, and
then we're all past on that brink already or had it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll be the first to say this house that we're in is one of the more connected houses. I mean, again, like I said, connected mesh network, but then also like in probably what 3/4 of this house is controlled by iPhone stuff or Alexa or God knows whatever else.
Which I have to point out, I'd rather die in rotten hell than have Alexa in my house. And I've made that very clear many times. But that being said, so we were getting ready for this evening's gathering, and for some odd reason, Alexa decided to play some like slow.
That would be my fault.
What's the word?
It was kind of tragic. It was sleepy time.
Real? Is that the word? Funeral?
Christmas music. Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God! Like, I've never heard Christmas music more like depressing. So I was like, hey, can you change up the music? So he said, yeah, go talk to Alexa. So I said, Alexa, put on Nine Inch Nails. And then all of a sudden I'm hearing this like a speaker, like an old school speaker. And I thought it came from his cell phone, maybe hearing me. So I was like, oh, that's funny. I hear, you know, his cell phone going off. He walked up, and what happened? What was it?
It was my thermostat.
Yeah. Thermostat. Now, I do have to say, the smart house definitely does have a place, though. Like, our house, and I was really resistant to this as well. I mean, because it was just, yeah, I wasn't wild about Alexa hearing and recording, and I'm still not. But, I mean, yeah, controls my Spotify account, like, the speakers all throughout the house, like, controls my lights. I mean, I say living room on, and the living room turns on. I say living room to 20%, and it turns to 20%. I can turn my living room to the color blue or whatever color on the color wheel I want. Or any of the other lights pretty much
but
in our house.
Yeah.
Controls my TV.
No. The best part is
everyone
garage
here. Yeah. But here is the best part. Yeah. Literally I can be in bed and be like, oh man, the living room light's on. And I just say, Alexa, turn off living room, and bam, the living room turns off. It's kind of amazing.
You're saying you would rather give up your potential for privacy because you're lazy.
Yes.
Yes, okay. Totally.
Yes. But here is the thing, though, is you know what? I am sorry. Given the fact that my cell phone is consistently on me.
Right. It makes no difference.
Somebody's always listening to me. Like, let's face it. I mean, whether or not we want to believe it, I do think that somebody is always hearing
what
we're
saying. They are 100% on the phone.
You know? So, and since my cell phone's always with me, somebody's constantly listening to me. So, may as well make life convenient for myself.
Struggling here.
Go there, Kurt.
Well, so what if the hair is in the bedroom? I don't really even care.
No, but hey, let's not traumatize.
You want to listen? You want to listen?
Yeah, exactly. Look, you're welcome, Alexa.
Take points.
Just saying.
Oh my god! Can you imagine, like, suddenly it came out with like a Alexa Olympics? Like, listen to.
Is that gamified?
And this one wins.
Tonight we are challenging Sleepy Hollow Trail versus Willow Glen Road. Go, guys, go. Gross.
This is disgusting.
Okay, so basically we're talking.
Wait, Adam was going to say it. Were you going to say something?
No, I was just saying the only other thing, flipping it back, is like, I will say that the best convenience we have is our garage door opener, totally controlled by phones.
How is that so convenient, though? Because I have a button I can press. What makes yours better?
Well, so the problem is we've been switching cars a lot lately, which sounds like a first world problem, but literally it's like one of those weird circumstances that happen to all
of
us.
That's what a smart home is. It's a first world problem.
Yeah. Well, it is. So yeah, you're absolutely correct. But incidentally, we were switching cars for a little while. So all of our cars had HomeLink built in and we didn't have the remotes for the house. And so instead of trying to figure out how to get a new remote car opener or whatever else, the phone is acting as our key now.
You know, the more and more you get to one unified controller, right? That's what you want. I mean, the reason we started, I was like, oh, you know, it'll be fun to have lights and just kind of change around and just mess around with for fun. And then we just became, well, that was kind of easy when it did a little more, got the TV hooked up, get the thermostat hooked up. You can change from home. You get your doors. You can put the automatic locks on. You can set light. We have lights to set up and turn on at dusk. You know, Google monitors the sunset for me. So I don't have to say it's 6 p.m. It looks at the earth and figures out when the dusk is happening in my area and turns on the lights. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it's getting smarter and smarter for me.
Oh my God, the Christmas tree lights, best thing ever. Yep. And then Amazon had a special on their Amazon truck that was $30 for a 2-pack of controlled lights last week.
I did not buy those.
It sounds like drugs.
I should have bought
those. You start out with a little bit, and then it's so easy that you get a little bit more, a little bit more, and then next thing you know, they run your life. And
yeah.
It's just...
Okay. God forbid you turn on your Christmas lights when it starts getting dark.
Okay, so
like I feel so like 1950s now that I have to plug them into the wall.
I'm just efficient.
Exactly. I can do other things now.
Oh my God. Okay. I cannot help, and I'm gonna pull this card. I know Kurt's gonna roll with me on this one. Uh-oh. Kurt and I are the only ones here that were like, no, we really are actively against what you guys are saying. And I understand you guys like the convenience, but it is so generational. And you guys are not so much younger than me. They're not that much younger than me. But it is
There's
so,
three of us at this table that are at least in the same decade of age. Yeah. So we're good.
Although you do have to tell, good. Though, like, I mean, there definitely is like a generational kind of situation that's going on with who's comfortable with tech versus who's not.
This it's is
not
called question. Diversity and inclusion.
That is a very PC way to do it, Kurt.
Which is actually feeding into my next topic, you guys. So what we've been talking about is the unintended consequences of technology, right? So we're talking about security and the fact that how we leverage technology, each progressive generation embraces faster than the previous generation. And again, there's not much of a gap between us. Let's be clear.
There's not that much of a gap.
But that being said, my question here is, and okay, so if we are embracing and we're willing to give up our information, our personal information, I post on Facebook, I'm fully cognizant and aware that I am willingly giving my data away. I get it. Now, do I want to give it away in my Samsung refrigerator, for example, you know, where it needs to know what I have food in my refrigerator? Do I want that coming back to me from an insurance perspective of saying, hey, Sia, you're a certain age, and oh yeah, you eat like crap. You eat a lot of crap. And by the way, you need to learn how to cook.
But you
and
kind
you
wonder
why you don't lose weight, right?
But you kind of already know that. I mean, I just went for my health screening for my health insurance, right? And I mean, all my triglyceride levels and HDLs, LDLs came back. And I mean, realistically, I mean, that's all at the end of the day, every year when my doctor sees it, he automatically knows what's in my fridge.
Or she.
Or she, yes. That's a very good point. You know, but I mean, they do. They automatically know what's in my fridge because, oh, hey, by the way, this was too high. Or, oh, yep, girl, you need to lose some weight. You know?
Yeah, but I don't need my insurance to know that if I want to have a cheat week and I'm going to go, you know, eat every single Halloween candy out there known to man, I don't want that necessarily on record to hold it against me.
Or 23andMe. There was just an article this week that they're selling all their data to pharmaceutical companies.
Oh, we knew it. We called it.
Yes.
Oh, yep. Yeah, we called that.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Well, I mean, look at Target and the big data stuff. I mean, Target literally knows that women are pregnant even before they know that they're pregnant because of how their buying has changed. I mean, so if you look at big data, I mean, big data is telling you that. And right. It's just literally how they're getting it through your Target cards, through your Target purchases. I mean, PepsiCo, you know, started, I mean, getting really big on big data probably about 2 years ago. Had the immense pleasure of meeting Indra Nooryi. And I mean, yeah, she was like, hey, we are so big into big data and like where it's going and how we're having our people analyze it. You know, CBRE made a partnership with MIT actually to start going through all their data because they're the number one commercial real estate company in the entire wide world. So they have more numbers than they even know what to do with and didn't know what to do with it. So they partnered with MIT's mathematics department to go ahead and start culling through the data. So that was probably about a year ago. So I'm sure the metrics that they're getting out of it now are ridiculous and, you know, will continue to shape how commercial real estate, you know, starts to transform. So, I mean, but all of this goes into, yes, how we're sharing data, you know, which then feeds, you know, okay, what do people do with the data? You know, I mean, you see even some of these jobs where they're going and they're just looking at the different post, you know, and people are hiring, you know, other people to, okay, what kind of post is this? When was it posted? And so then they're able to then sell those metrics, you know, to entrepreneurs like ourselves with, okay, well, here's the best time to post this kind of post. Here's the best time to post this kind of post. You know, I mean, so there's relevant uses to it. I do think it can be scary.
So I'll put it this kind of point and then, so there's a point where, yeah, we are data and everything else, right? But the flip side is my favorite example of data and trying not to stand out is your EU has great data laws, GDPR is changing how we're looking at it in the US and everything else.
EU?
European Union.
Sorry.
European Union is looking at making sure that we look at our laws carefully, and then California with the privacy and everything else, right? So that's all happening. Now, because of German's law, Germany specifically, the laws there that for privacy and everything else, you can opt for your house not to be included in Google Street View or Apple Street View or whatever else it is. Well, incidentally, there was a house that one of the owners, to their own discretion, they said, look, we don't want to be included in the Street View thing. So they blurred out their house and said, look, well, we don't want to be in Google Street View, so please blur our house. Well, 1301 said, we don't care. 1305 said, we don't care. So everybody figured out it was 1303 on that side of the house that got blurred. And so they got TP'd and graffitied and just vandalized like crazy because they were the one house that was blurred out. And so it's how far do you stick out like a sore thumb for being not collected on data? And then how much do you become a needle in a needle stack for allowing your data to be collected? Now, on the flip side, do I agree that like they can localize you and they can do all sorts of scary stuff? Yeah, absolutely. And that's really scary. But at the same time, what happens then? So
Kurt, did you have any additional thoughts? I see you like
there's so much. Yeah, you know, the thing, I think the responsibility is still to Jax's point with GDPR. Until we have laws around what is their responsibility. So earlier we were, you know, kind of ragging on you a little bit about Candy Crush, but I mean, that's, they're getting free data. And that's something that's been happening for years around all these free games. And that was kind of the beginning of giving away all this information, but what they use it for and how responsible they are. So we talked about, we opened up with Marriott, you know, what's the responsibility on their side as an app provider? And so earlier we were talking about a couple of different things that had to do with automobiles, and one of them had to deal with, you know, actually using your VIN number for information. Well, now I have even more information around what type of vehicle you drive, like specifics around the vehicle itself, not just the type, but that particular vehicle, because I have the VIN number. And there's all these different things that can be tied together, but where's the responsibility lie? And I think that that's really where my biggest concern comes to play, is because nobody is going to get anything more than a slap on the wrist or, you know, a dotted I, if that, you know, until some regulations come around it. And, you know, until then, the responsibility part, that's a really big deal, because it's like, who gets use of that? Who gets to determine what that gets used for? Is it good or is it bad? Is it against us? Is it for us? And, you know, I don't want to derail and get off on one of my other favorite topics around blockchain, but, you know, from an infrastructure
perspective.
Hashtag
blockchain.
Thank you, Kurt. You're welcome. I had to help you out. But, you know, it's the thing is, from an infrastructure perspective of being able to have, you know, control and usage over your data, that becomes a really interesting topic, which I'm going to digress now. You know, I gave you a hashtag.
Was it Equifax that got hacked, or what was the big credit bureau? And what happened to them?
Nothing.
Credit. Marriott, I'm like, hey, you got my email address. What are you gonna do with it? That's my credit. Mm-hmm. Like, that's huge. Like, I had to lock down everything after that. But
you know, the other thing I was thinking of as we're talking about, you know, as you get invested into an ecosystem, right? You talk about, like, let's say, like an Apple ecosystem or an Android or Microsoft, you're starting to get their apps, all their things to make it, you know, your next technology. Well, now we're all invested in the internet, right? Everybody thinks it's what you use, right? It's just commonplace. But no one knows that it's not common knowledge about net neutrality, right? No one really talks about that. That's a big thing that's coming up right now.
Unless you're from Verizon, AT&T background.
So it's not a common, I guess, threat amongst people, right? The internet's this, it's one level of free, right? To stay open and a set price. But, you know, there are, you know, pushes to make that more expensive. And then if that changes, you're invested, like, you know, we have the smart homes or whatever, you're invested in all this, and everything's coming through the web now, and I've got that set up and stream, my cable cut, all those type of things. Now, all of a sudden, the internet is four times what it costs because the rules changed, because the law changed. I'm so invested in that, I just have to eat it.
Or do you have to? Okay, so now let's take it from an entrepreneurial perspective. We lose net neutrality, and all of a sudden, now we can charge for additional services, premium services, and things like that. As an entrepreneur, that doesn't necessarily bother me as much, but as a consumer, absolutely. And I think that that's where you see the issues come into play, because, you know, as we were talking earlier about the house that we're in right now being so connected. They don't want a monthly fee for every one of the devices that are connected. That's the reason why you use Wi-Fi or mesh network.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so whenever you start getting into the net neutrality side and have to start paying premium services, that's entrepreneurial. I love it because businesses are going to make money with other businesses. As a consumer, that's a challenge.
Well, and I think that's where we come back to hashtag blockchain, you know?
Thank you.
I mean, because you look at it, right? And right now the SEC isn't really involved, but the SEC is trying to become involved, because why? It's big money, right? And you look at it from a consumer standpoint, and there's not really anything, right? Because, hey, there's, you know, ATMs that are popping up, blockchain ATMs where you can pull out your money. But from an entrepreneurial standpoint, I mean, it definitely makes a difference, because there, you know, I'm not paying all of these service charge fees. I'm not paying swipe fees like I am, you know, with Square or any other merchant services. So there's a big difference on an entrepreneurial standpoint than there is just on a consumer end.
So there's a little misconception there too.
There's not a fee per se, but there is a network transaction fee that has to be paid. And that I think is where it becomes this, because like gas with Ether, you know, in order to be able to move things around, there is a fee, a transaction fee, but it's not the same as an ATM fee. You're right.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and it's not the same too. Like, I mean, if you look at the blockchain fees that entrepreneurs are being charged at, it's definitely not the same as like a merchant service fee. Right. I mean, because some of them, I think even Square, which is pretty standardized, I think it's like, what, a 2.75% per swipe. You know, I think if you key, it goes up to like a 3% type situation. Mm. You know, most entrepreneurs, if you're lucky, you're, you know, being able to get, you know, below 2%. But again, I mean, it all just depends on where you're going with, what type of card they're using. Or is it reward cards? Is it Amex? Is it, you know, an ATM card? I mean, you know, and you get different rates for each time, you know, each type. Right. So I think that's where you're kind of getting into the government now trying to, because it's bigger money than, say, our information data sales, which is kind of silly because I think that's huge money. And I think the government's overlooking it, and they're getting more into the SEC trying to come into blockchain because they think that it's big money, but yet they're overlooking the sale of data, which I think is ridiculous because I think there's probably more money in that right now than there is in blockchain.
There is. And that's actually a future topic. So I'll
cut it there.
Let's chill down until after we have that one, and then we can go back. So, okay. Going back to, let's take a little step back here, the unintended consequences of tech. And it's one other topic I thought kind of got everyone excited when I mentioned it earlier, which the requirement of a 4-year degree to do a job. Now, I've got some CTs, I've got a CEO in this mix here. So you guys being hiring managers that you are, what are your thoughts on you know, competency-based hiring versus...
Well, and didn't Apple and Google, and there was another company that lifted this requirement off from hiring. So like these companies are seeing this too, and I think Facebook was one. I don't know. You got to quote me again. I'm not being very good at my sources here, but there were some, like several very large companies that came out with this, and they are no longer requiring a 4-year degree. So it's definitely coming on the forefront.
Right. Well, and then the other big issue that I have is all the companies you just mentioned are CEOs, founders that are very famous. Both Gates and Jobs never finished their 4-year degree. So right. Like the fact that they're requiring one is kind of a little bit hypocritical. And Jobs was notorious in the very beginning to say, screw you, IBM, because whenever somebody came in, which a great movie, again, going to a throwback of Hackers. One of my good friends, version of Wikipedia, Kylepedia, but there's a great movie called Pirates of Silicon Valley, and it's a very accurate movie, as well as accurate can be, for how IBM, Microsoft, and Apple all started. And it's very well done. And even the founders of all the companies, even when Jobs was alive, it's like, yeah, that's pretty much how I was. I was just that much of a pain in the ass and everything else. But going back to it, so I love that, like, now that we require 4-year degrees to get into anything. And then, okay, so first it was high school, then it was 4-year degree, then it became a master's degree. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like, okay, well, I have a master's. Do I need to go get a PhD? Do I need to go get something else to make me stand out from the rest of the crowd and the MBA and everything else? And honestly, MBAs are completely useless. I read a degree that MFA was better than MBA. Well, okay, that's great, but nobody knows what MFA is. So they don't understand that, like, I still went to grad school for freaking ever and did something interesting and everything else. So me being the pain in the ass that I am, I never, ever end up saying that, yeah, by the way, I have all this cool stuff that I've done in the past and I did all this research and everything else. No, it's what I've been held to at my last standard. And that's also something that another industry has always been held by. So as being in the film industry, we are all always held by the last project that we did, not what we did 3 years ago, not what we did 5 years ago. And that's also a big issue with it, as well as technology. And I know, Leslie, you were talking about it also. It was like, nobody's putting the ages and the years and the dates on their technology piece.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because you look at it, right? And even if you do have an MBA or a PhD in some of these areas, I mean, the reality of it is, if you got it in the 1990s, even in the early 2000s, the technology has changed so much from where we are today that it's no longer even relevant what you learned. And so unless you actively kept up with it, any sort of, I mean, you know, I had a an engineering instructor that said basically, here were the degrees that we got, you know, and can we use language?
Go for it.
Okay.
We'll explicit this thing.
Okay. So the BS meant bull meep. and then you got your MS, which was more, and then you got your PhD, which is piled higher and deeper. And and so, I mean, that's kind of where I am with some of these. Now, you know, the hubby and I kind of, we talk about this, and both of us have fairly technical degrees, but the reality of it is we've talked about it, that some of these things, it doesn't really necessarily seem that you need a degree. You know, while we agree that engineers, doctors, you know, things of that nature definitely need a degree because people need to be held to a certain standard and have a testing, you know, because this definitely impacts bridges, healthcare, I mean, those kind of situations, nurses. But realistically, if I'm going to do coding, I mean, there are some high schoolers that can do coding way better than some people that have a computer science degree. You know, I mean, but again, it's because they grew up with the technology. So, you know, am I in line with 100%? Do you need to have a degree? I think, again, it's a question of what are you going for? You know, and yes, if it's an engineer, if it's a doctor, then yes, 100%, I stand by, you need that degree and you need to go to the school and get the training. You know, but if it's, you know, if there's somebody working on my car, I definitely want them to have some training. But if it's, hey, are you capable of building my website or doing my social media, you know, or even potentially looking at my finances because maybe you're just a whiz at numbers and accounting. Do I think that you necessarily need that piece of paper? No. Do I think that you need to be able to prove it to me that you've got the skill set? 100%. Do I need to see that you're a hustler? 100%. You know, because I mean, let's face it. I think a lot of us that are entrepreneurs, like we didn't study what we're doing here. You know, it's just that we hustled, we found something that we like, you know, we found something that we're good at, and we go and we pursue it and we find the things to do that.
Well, and I'll step in and even say beyond the 4-year degree, I think corporations completely have to change the way they hire because they are so, it is black and white. You follow the corporate, you follow corporate. Oh, you didn't? You're not in the typical path of corporate. Well, then we can't touch you. And they are missing, like, there's a lot of people now are, you know what, I'm going to take some time off and I'm going to take some time off for me. I just need a year off to like refocus and get like that person who has taken that year off to like figure some stuff out. And I feel they're more valuable than the person who just worked a crap job to work a crap job to continue. Or maybe the person who went to start their own gig and okay, it didn't work out. And it's so black and white with corporate. Like you, it's like this checkbox of BS. It's this checkbox of, and I'm going to miss really incredible talent because I don't know how to think outside those checkboxes. They don't have a 4-year degree, but they've coded their own stuff for 20 years. Well, I can't take them because they don't have that 4-year degree. I can't check off that box. And I think there's going to be a lot of changes in the way companies hire because it just, you're going to miss out on incredible talent.
Well, and that's the other problem, right? I will absolutely agree with the other part of it is we're leaving a whole generation with debt. And this is a thing that Kurt and I have been talking about a lot lately is the fact that, we have been talking about the fact that like, you know, there's the baby boomer generation that none of us at this table are at part of. And we've been not being able to like, well, so because of them working so late, the rest of this generation between Generation X and Generation Zennial or whatever the crap we are, and then the millennials. Right, we're whatever ish. The hell they
you're
are.
Millennial. You guys are technically millennials.
Yeah, we're technically both.
We're
in the weird, like, nonsense gray zone, and then there we're in the
bridgers.
Cusp.
We're bridgers.
You're exactly. We're Zennials. I'll claim the word Zennial. But
you're not a Zennial because that's younger.
Yeah, that's younger. Way younger than you.
Zennials are kids.
Zennials are your nieces.
And no, yeah. Zennial is the mix between millennial
like
and Gen X.
Like in their 20s. You're sunshine. You ain't in your 20s.
We are not in our 20s, baby.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I'm the Zennial because I'm like 77. So I think it's 77 to 81. Is that funky?
Is it? I don't know. But anyways,
but
beyond that.
38 to 36.
Yeah, so who's the committee that comes up with the age brackets?
I know.
That
I can right. Yeah,
screw
you
that
look.
Nonsense. Yeah, exactly. There you go.
It's on Wikipedia, and so it says, okay.
Yeah.
Hang on, let me create a Wiki page real quick.
Yeah. So at any rate, we're at this generation which is lost at figuring out who's retiring where. And then we've got this whole generation that's coming out of college that's strapped with a lot of debt because they have student loans and everything else. And then they're like, oh yeah, we'll just wait till they get to 55 and they were going to retire. And then what? And that's not the case. Like, I mean, Kurt, you have been part of these conversations more so than I have.
Yeah. And that actually is a real conversation because even working with startups, obviously you get a chance to work with multiple generations. And I can remember that there was a course even back at, during my Red days, that we got a chance to take, that was a Stephen Covey course that was leading across generations, that I thought was a phenomenal introduction to how to understand or even have the desire to understand and try to communicate across generations. But one of the things, actually, to Adam's point, whenever, you know, talking about the mindset, Gen X isn't even in the thought process of this next generation that's coming up as entrepreneurs. And so whenever you're having conversations around, you know, what's your aspiration, you know, what is it that you're wanting to do, either in business or as a professional, either one, then it's, well, we've got 5 to 7 years. I said, well, what does that mean? And, well, that's whenever the baby boomers finally will retire. And as a Gen X, I look at them and go, so who's next? And they go, well, the millennials are next. I go, so you're, hello, right? So it's like, hey.
You're missing the responsible generation.
Right?
What are you talking about? Right here.
I didn't say that. But, you know, it is an interesting conversation because, and even going back to what started this on the four-year degree piece of it, I will always side with the person with the experience at the table is the one that should have the first shot, whatever that is. And I don't care. I mean, it's difficult for me to understand all the PC terms because I'm just a black and white kind of person when it comes to that. Not literally. That was probably messed up what I just said. But, you know, it's just...
that was so not PC.
Right. And, you know, it's just like, you know, the inclusion and, you know, the diversity side of things. You know, actually, Adam and I were talking about this the other day with the three of us that are, you know, it's just like, wow, that's inclusion and diversity right there. And it wasn't by design. It was just because the three people that came to the table that actually are putting something together.
I was actually just putting check boxes.
Aaron's our PC tasker.
Hashtag HR. But, you know, it's just the hustle piece of it, you know, back to what Leslie was saying earlier, you know, the hustle side of things, the people that have been there, done that, it's, you know, I have this saying, and it's interesting, is I don't ever want to go to battle with somebody that has shiny armor on, because those are the people that'll get you killed because they don't know what they're doing yet. Yep. So take them over to the sideline, beat on their armor a little bit. And what that means is give them the experience that they need. Don't just say, go find experience and come back, but actually help them do that. And I think that that's one of the things that I find the most fulfillment with right now in this phase of my life is getting to take people under my proverbial wing and give them those experiences, help them be able to see things that they haven't seen. And you can only do that because you have the experience. And, you know, I would encourage anybody that's listening to this that is of that age to where you've had, you know, a decade plus of experience within corporate America or in entrepreneurship, find somebody to help. And don't call it a mentor-mentee type relationship. Just help them, because it doesn't have to have a formal title, because it's not a subordinate, you know, and it's a superior and inferior. It's none of that. It's just the fact that you want to help somebody get to their next level. So.
And to the point of people without experience, I just, this is like total sidetrack. Jax, I appreciate this. Kurt turned the best phrase ever that I said today, and somebody was like, oh my God, that's the best term ever, is souffle. So it's somebody who, like, as you're hiring, to your point of like, get the people with experience. So a souffle is someone who puts on a good front, but basically when you put pressure on, they pop. So, we have a lot of souffles around here, but anyway, but to that point, it's like, look out for your souffles.
Hashtag.
Cause they're going to have souffles. The shiny armor. And souffles will have the shiny.
I almost wore my shirt tonight. Hashtag no souffle. Almost did it.
Or they sandpaper their armor to hide the actual.
Yeah.
But see, and the thing is if they sandpaper their armor, you'll find out.
Yeah. You know, because I mean, that's exactly right. And that's the part that I think that people don't try to be something that you're not yet. Yeah. Right. It's that's the same thing as like digging for coal and pretending that it's a diamond. Don't do it. Let it endure the pressure, because at the end, what happens is what's so precious about a diamond is the process it goes through. And if it doesn't go through the process, it never gets to the point to where you can actually cut it. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cause the tears, but that's true. You know, it's just like, that's the beauty behind it. Endure the process. Don't quit. Don't give up.
I think we've got our quote guy.
Yeah. I
just came in with the one-liners.
No. Well, the souffle, he gets a pass for the rest of the decade.
Yeah.
So the thing that is interesting here, and we're talking, you know, so here's what I was thinking about the whole time is, when you go to hire, right, big corporations, you've got your websites that know how to do it. You've got, you know how to apply for a big job. And this is what I think about, like a civilization that was made, right? We're talking about, you know, doesn't matter if you have a 4-year degree or not. Well, same thing as when you make a big civilization, it mattered that you had infrastructure, right? You had roads. So what's the infrastructure for hiring people that are not 4-year degree? Where is a place that you can go and look for these people that's, you can say, is, I'll say, accredited, right? Says, all right, these are people and I can go look for them. I can go find talent here. There's no spot for something like that. So there's no real big pools that are, you know, updated. So that's what you need.
I wouldn't say that there's
business idea.
That they're known. Yeah. Here's what I would recommend. Go to your different accelerator programs that have like a, you know, and I don't want to name any names. People can figure those out. But large accelerator programs that are well known and have funded startups, that's where you're going to find people that have actually been in the trenches. Because listen, anybody that's been in startup land for 2 years plus, those are some people with some scars on their body, period. Yeah. End of story. It doesn't matter what position they've held. They've done some 24-hour days. They've done some, you know, 14, 16-week programs. And at least they have some experience, to your point. But I think going and finding them on the street, find them at a meetup,
yeah, that's where it's hard. If you can get that coordination somewhere, like, you know, we talk about apps now. If there was, that's the next big thing, right? If you could have something that's, here's how you find something.
Shut up.
Shut up.
Shut up.
Maybe you just need to
give it away.
Hashtag my CTO needs to make that.
Shut up. But something that we've moved away from is apprenticeships. Like, okay, you've got that in certain fields and professions. But in general, there's so much more now. Now that we've got this emerging, again, with our technology and our shift in society towards electronic-based entertainment, digital-based entertainment, etc., I do think we need to get back to that world of apprenticeship, because there may not be a course curriculum for that.
So there's two things on that, right? So the one side is, correct me up, when I was at Texas Tech, which, like, if you think about it, 4-year university, great university in Texas. But they were always afraid of offering too many practical courses because they did not want to become a technical college because they have the name Texas Tech. And I'm like, oh my God, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard because I'm not learning anything technical. And so they were so afraid of becoming a technical college that they would swing the total opposite way and not teach us anything of any value. And it was the same way a lot of, I bounced through the Big 12. I'll be the first to admit it. I went from Tech to A&M to OU and finally graduated OU, and then I ended up at UTD for like the rest of my career for parts of it. So I literally did the Big 12 tour and then some, and then I also ended up racing with KU. So there's like a lot of auto racing gear going on. So like I literally did the Big 12 tour. So every one of those schools that I ever talked to, they were so afraid of teaching you the tool that you needed to use in the real world that they wouldn't teach you the programs. They wouldn't teach you anything else. They taught you a bunch of useless knowledge. And not that I'm saying that useless knowledge was useless, but literally now I'm using it for bar trivia than I am using it for anything else. So that's the one side of it. And then you look at one of the world's strongest economies, Germany. And Germany prides itself very much so on apprenticeships. And that's the other big thing, right? So you look at apprenticeships and you look at Germany and strongest economy and everything else. And you look at our economy and we're afraid to take in immigrants and everything else. And I'm saying this at a table that's very diverse and very immigrant friendly and everything else. And you look at us and we're like, okay, well, yeah, you know, we look at the plumbers and we're like, yeah, they suck and the carpenters suck and everything else. But It's funny is when you call a plumber and you're like literally shot in the gut with the bill because they make more money than you do as an engineer or a 4-year degree person or anything else. And so you can barely afford a plumber, you can barely afford a carpenter, you can barely afford anybody to come in your house. And so you can't even afford somebody who has to go through technically an apprenticeship to fix your house when that's what you need to live in. So that's also a huge problem as well there. So I absolutely 100% agree that the entire system for between certification, education, and what the hell it means and what the hell you want to do to make yourself happy is makes any sense whatsoever. And the last piece I'm going to add on to that is, especially we've got a couple of car geeks in the house, is mechanics, right? So we don't have any more mechanics. And the worst one outside of mechanics is we don't have any body shops left. I'm trying to restore a car and I know I suck at body work. I do not want to do the body work on my car. I will do all the mechanical all day long, but good luck finding a body shop and luck finding a body shop that's worth a damn.
Yep. I agree. You know, I'm a car geek. So yeah, I mean, it's hard. And you know, now that the cars have gone so technical too, right? I mean, it's basically, I mean, Mercedes, you have to take your lights come on. I think it's what, every 6 weeks, some sort of sensor goes off and you have to go into the dealership because they're the only ones that have the computers that will turn that sensor off because you can't take it to any, you know, Joe Schmo. Because they don't know how to work the computers that work. I mean, and so many cars have gone towards that now. And I mean, you look at it and yeah, like nobody's really getting that kind of like that technological aspect of how to deal with everything, you know? And I mean, yeah, you talk about Germany and I mean, Germany, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I can go left or right on this. But with schooling, I mean, Germany's schools are free. You know, they're 100% free for university. But yet you look at our generation was coming out of college in a depression area. So what did most of our generation do? Well, they went on to go get their MBAs and became even more indebted. You know, so I mean, most of our generation came out of college having, you know, an undergrad and an MBA, but were well into the six figures of debt and no job. And by the way, at this point now, they're starting their careers in their mid-20s and have zero experience, you know? And so now, so coming to your, back to you, Kurt, where you were saying, well, hey, wait, you're overlooking our generation because baby boomers will be phasing out and now it's kind of like our time to shine. But now you've got all these people from our generation that are ultra freaking schooled, you know, and have now just kind of been waiting in the flanks there, you know, to take over. And I mean, so I think we've kind of created our own problems here, you know, because obviously our generation needs these jobs because we've paid hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt.
But that's the whole thing. And I've said this before, the education system, and I don't want to be too crazy.
It's flawed.
Or political on this, but I do believe that we do need to get away from, yes, technology does drive so much of our behavior today. And yes, you're going to need people that are in the computer sciences, computer engineering, software. That you do need the coders of the world. You absolutely do. But the fact that I can't garden, mm-hmm. I can't, I barely cook.
Yep. Right.
I mean, the idea of me doing laundry without
personal
finance
pisses me off more than anything.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Personal finance, and this is coming from somebody that has a background in this. So I actually started my career off with, I don't know if you guys even know this, but I started my career off in Boston at Oppenheimer. So running like y'all's personal books. Then nerd. Switched over to, total nerd. Okay. Then switched over to the buy side to do the hedge fund. And then actually when I moved down here, I was doing investment banking. But here's the thing though, is literally like some of the people that y'all would trust y'all's personal finances with, you should not be trusting them. And I am sorry. I worked for a big, big name brokerage. And like, you don't want to trust them. Like, you don't want to trust them. Like, just let me put it to you this way. What was the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio?
Wolf on Wall Street.
Wolf on Wall Street. Yeah. Hashtag it's true. Not even going to lie. That was literally my first year.
So I've said before in other podcasts, I love what Mike Rowe is doing and what he's been advocating for is you still need to maintain the infrastructure. You still need very skilled
laborers.
Yeah. And I don't even want to call it labor because I guess all laborers. I don't like the designations because I think there's a connotation somehow that
there is a negative aspect to it.
I guess. And you know, I was just talking about the pipeline out in the Dakotas or where it was. They needed welders, and these guys are all making six figures. No one ever thinks about their massive shortage where they're paying. Not only six figures, but bonuses and the cost of living out there. Like, people pay them to move into an apartment I mean, who wants a gig? And it's a perfect gig.
So we have shortage on any of the trades, right? So I love calling it trades because it feels like you have
a skill.
Yeah. A legit skill, right? Like we like idolize the folks in Charles Dickens. It's I'm going to forget the Charles Dickens thing in a second.
Great I'll remember Expectations.
It. Thank you. We idolize those guys, right? They're blacksmiths and they worked really hard. And any of those Victorian era folks, it's like, okay, you're trades, you have an apprenticeship and you went through a journeyman and you went through this and that and the other. And so we're missing welders. We're missing, folks from like any of the major trades that we see that come to our house, like electricians and plumbers and this, that, and the other. And by the way, with Texas, We are missing plumbers even more so because plumbers are the only ones certified to do our natural gas in our house. So that's a whole nother cluster of a mess that you have to deal with. Like right now I'm dealing with the house and I have HVAC issues. And so that's a whole nother thing. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a whole nother disaster. And as an engineer, I get it. And it's like principles and stuff like that, but I don't want to screw with that crap. I can't find a good person to wire my house for AV and I don't want to mess with the wiring of the house. I just want them to drop the cables, but that's a whole nother cluster of a mess. There's another cluster of a mess with tow trucks. Like we can't find tow trucks worth a damn either. And then my other favorite, and I will throw this back out to the car guy, is like the whole shipping of cars is a cluster.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
You can't ship a car to save your life. So
it is the hardest thing. Like, I mean, you truly, to make it the easiest way, you have to go through a dealership.
Well, not even go through a dealership, but even the dealerships struggle with shipping cars because the guys who show up to ship the cars, and especially the higher end cars, cannot ship the cars to save their life.
Yeah, but the only way that it's easier on your side is if you go through the dealership and the dealership handles all the problems for you because you paid them to.
Right.
Can I interrupt real quick?
Well, and hang on. I'm going to add one other trade that's even more scary that we're running out of, which will even cuss up even more, is we're running out of pilots.
Oh,
that is a scary one. Yes. That is a scary one.
Yeah. Hashtag AI. No.
Yes. Well, oh my God. Connected plane.
But I will say, okay, what was that plane though that went down?
Taiwan.
Yes, the Taiwan.
Malaysia.
Yes, the Malaysia plane that went down, and they had said that the whole thing behind it was that it was on autopilot, and the autopilot hadn't been taught to deal with the circumstance that it was currently in, and they tried to take it out of autopilot, but then the it automatically diverted back to autopilot, so the pilots thought they were flying, but they weren't.
That's not the case. So here's what's even more about that. So the engineers who designed it, and this is something I deal with on a regular basis, especially at work, especially with some of the people that report to me directly are artists, and they're rightfully so artists. And so the problem is engineers design stuff for engineers and not the actual end user. Yeah. And so what happened was, especially specifically with the Malaysia flight, and this is why I have even more issues with where we're going in the trades and education and everything else, is the fact that engineers designed it so that the sensor was faulty, but they were like, no, the sensor will never die, or the sensor will never have a failure because we're trusting our sensors. Sensor had a failure. Autopilot did not let the pilots take over and disengage. And so the pilots tried to correct, but the autopilot overrode. It was still on, and that's what overrode it. And so that's
how do they know that? Because they didn't
know. So the plane was literally nosediving straight towards the ground, and they pulled up on the plane, and the plane did not
pull up. But they didn't find this plane.
Well, they went back and looked at all the engineering scopes and like ran all the tests. And then, so now they know.
That's what they think.
So now they know that while the pilots were trying to fly it, they couldn't because the AI was
And then
still
Boeing has internal memos saying that the AI is up. And then also they know that the firmware is up. And they are telling everybody to shut off the firmware, and they're releasing a firmware update, ground the planes.
Yeah.
They're going to release a firmware update to all the planes, which is a whole nother cluster because they're releasing firmware updates to all the planes.
Which firmware updates, and my CTO can speak to this in spades, but firmware updates are always a situation, and they didn't even release when the firmware updates were going to be released or sort of what testing was going to be happening with those firmware updates.
Yeah, no, you went back. I thought you had a great point as engineers design for engineers. And it's the same thing. We go back to like the trade school versus apprenticeship. You know, when I went to school, I was real lucky at MIT. They had a machine shop. So when I did mechanical engineering, there was a machine shop. So when I went to design a part for the first time, and I was like, this is great. This looks so cool on my 3D CAD computer. And then I said, okay, cool. Let's go build it. And I took it down to the lathe, and I took it down to the mill. And I was like, I can't make that whole. There's no way that's physically possible to build that. And that's the problem, right? That's the when I go say, here, I designed my part. Cool. I want to go get the supplier to make it. They're going to go, that's great. It can happen.
Hashtag 3D printer.
Uh-oh.
there's that. Well, but there's a need. Also, I will say this related to that. Like, that's the problem we have right now with engineers, design for engineering things. Let's take something even more basic than that. Basic cart maintenance. And then flip it to also the new law that just can't, like, that's getting fixed with DMCA, because part of DMCA has clauses in it as well. So the first part is cars. So the Sebring platform for Chrysler, which is not just the Sebring, the Chrysler Sebring, and there's like minivans that go to it, and minivans are like way too many, especially in the parts of town that we all live in around this table. But you have to take off the front passenger side tire, remove the wheel well, and that's when you get to the oil filter to do the oil change on this particular Chrysler that's car, which is a basic car. It's not anything that's a fancy, like that's a higher end car that would be like, all right, I got to drop the engine, I got to do this, that, and the other, or it may catch on fire like a Ferrari. Not saying anything.
My engine sits under my bottom.
Right, so there's that. So, but
it's a
mid-engine car, which is great, and that's designed to have some goofiness. But like, you're talking about a car that was sold to the masses.
Yeah.
That's a higher volume car, and it's not just, like I said, the sedan, but also the minivan. So that's an extremely high volume car. And you're talking about engineers that are like, oh, la, 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 la. Oh yeah, it's no big deal. You have to take apart the car and to just do basic maintenance on it that every 5,000 miles it requires. So that's the first problem. The second problem behind it with the maintenance issue and everything else that these guys are not thinking about, which, you know, you're talking about something that's like very basic that like, hey, I need to design for an engineer perspective and an engineering mind is, and I totally lost my train of thought. So let's get out with my
cut off.
That's a pregnancy brain right there.
No eggnog for you.
That's an eggnog brain is what he's got with a little bit of single malt.
Yeah,
we're talking about trades and Sebrings and crazy oil changes.
I'll get there eventually, but okay. Right now I'll leave it alone because right now car brain's gone.
Well, you hit on the head there, right? It's become it's a moneymaker now for service, right? So let me think of Apple.
Yeah.
I can't take apart an Apple phone. I'm gonna take it in. That's what it's gonna.
Yeah, thank you.
Good turnaround. Let the two CTOs talk.
Exactly. Yeah. They look at each other. They speak in their language.
So DMCA. So what was really funny about this is like, well, with Apple, right? So John Deere was, which is funny, is you think of the farmer, ultimate like person who can work on their own vehicles and work on all their own stuff. Well, John Deere got pissed at everybody for fixing their own tractor, which you're like, you're pissing off your base, literally like your ultimate buyer, right? Is the farmer cannot work on their tractor legally. Yeah. So what WTF, right? Now they can't work on their tractor, WTF. And then Apple is under the same thing where they're because the part and the phone is so integrated. And that also causes another problem, which is a huge amount of waste. Now, okay, a tractor is one thing. You're not going to obviously waste a tractor because it's too big and it's too ornery and whatever else. But we have a ton of digital waste with all these mobile phones and everything and upgrade. So the new DMCA law is getting rid of the Copyright Act that says they no longer own the car. And GM has said this outright. The CEO of GM came out at LA Car Show or Dubai or Paris Car Show, one of the big car shows that said it, and it was, you know, GM said, you no longer own your car. You're only licensing it to us on a perpetual basis. So that's a whole cluster situation too. So yeah.
Oh, no.
New topic, see ya.
Oh, no. No, 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 no. You done talked about cars and I got lost in my own my world. So, I mean, I got what you're saying, sort of. Yeah. No, but I couldn't understand is, so I have a particular car and the headlight went out and, I was told it was going to cost us $1,200 to replace the headlight, to which I replied, yeah, no, we're good. And so the boyfriend decided to do it himself. Thank God for YouTube and all those wonderful, you know, DIY videos. And he did it. He replaced it. But he took apart this car.
How scared were you?
Very scared. I love my car. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not going to lie. I'm amazed. So two things. One is every time anything breaks on my car, if it's a certain thing that breaks, I just upgrade it. And for that reason, I now have disc brakes. Like CCFLs on my front, which CCFLs
street legal harnesses.
Yeah.
Roll bars.
Exactly. It's fine. And it's only a pickup truck, so it goes faster than it should, and it stops faster than it should, which is also weird to people out. And it's taller than it should, so it also weirds people out. But the flip side of that is I'm amazed that Rachel still puts up with me, because there's literally a day where we were about to go somewhere in 2 hours for like a really fancy thing, and literally the whole front end of my truck was missing.
Oh my God.
I put it together within 5 minutes of us leaving. It was great.
Oh yeah, no.
It would have been like, we're Ubering.
Exactly, right? Well, I mean, I have a sedan. I have a luxury sedan. And, you know, I was panicked when I saw the entire front bumper and the front everything is off. And, like,
For
a headlight, the wheel was off. It's elevated. And I'm like, you're not a car person. What are you doing?
Yeah, that would have scared me.
You know, but he did a good job because...
Yay, boyfriend.
The other light is now out.
But now he knows what to do.
Now I said I don't want to know what you're doing. But so
now you can figure out where the bolts that were left over, where they go this time.
Now, right? Now you and I will just go have a meeting while he fixes the car.
Exactly. Right, you can be my driver.
Yeah, you guys take care of your meetings. And the other fun part is I will always, forever in a day, wish Chrysler had hired better engineers. The last light bulb I had to fix on a Chrysler recently, and this is like literally 3 days ago, I had to take the radiator reservoir, like the coolant reservoir out, the power steering reservoir out, and like one other like major like holder of liquids out, just to take out the light bulb.
I don't understand. But that, you know what though? But I guess it's job security for the services world, right?
So that's a true story.
Why is it a Chrysler that has this much complication?
No, it's not Sunshine.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's not like it's a European car or, you know, a race car.
You've got a European car. Chrysler is American.
Yeah. And the most generic base model of car.
Well, we're humans and we like to complicate things, I think, right?
Hey, straight line is not always the fastest way to get there, okay? Sometimes it's those zigzag, you know, up and around, loop-de-loop kind of lines that get you the fastest there.
Make it a lot more fun. Okay, so guys, this was a heck of a lot of fun. I do appreciate your time, and I know we're kind of drifting off, and we've drifted off for a little bit. So, Aaron, you're really good. Does anybody have any like last comments that you would like to share with this evening's little soiree?
Is there a hashtag we left out?
Well, you know what? Well,
hashtag soiree.
Soiree.
Hashtag MBD.
Yes. Yes. Oh,
yeah, actually.
Yes. I actually want to hear more about Moments by Design.
We got
Okay. So Moments by Design. So we are basically a party in a box. So let's face it, guys, planning a party. Kind of a time sink. We spend weeks upon weeks on Pinterest trying to make it look perfect, trying to pick up that perfect theme, and then spend at least a day driving all over creation trying to find everything. Well, Moments by Design takes all of that away. We've already done all the Pinterest boards. We've already done all of the sourcing. And so all you do is go onto our website. You pick your themed box and everything ships directly to you with instructions on here's your theme, here's how to set it up so it's Insta-worthy, and based on your theme, here's the music you should be playing, and here's the food you should be serving. Dude. So life's about to get a lot more fun, guys.
Yeah. Non-Insta-worthy parties.
Yeah.
Please. So real quick, music you should be playing. Do you have any Spotify playlists?
We do. Actually, we do them all through Spotify. All of our playlists are through Spotify. And we've got kind of, depending on the boxes, we have kid-friendly versions. We have older adult versions that may have some explicit lyrics. But yeah, I mean, so there, and everything is done through Spotify.
That's awesome. The no think. The less I have to think, the better.
That's how we're trying to do it.
And Leslie, Michael, thank you so much for your graciousness in sponsoring tonight.
Thank
you. You're our very first official sponsor.
Well, we love innovation, Holly.
What are you doing?
So
just passing a phone.
Yes.
All right. Well, that is the end of tonight's episode. Thank you all so much for joining us.
And thank you so much for your time, Kurt, Michael, Leslie, Adam, Jax, whatever your name is.
Hey, whoever you are.
I think we need to do this again.
Let's do it.
It'll be a regular thing.
Yay. Thank you. Right. Good night, guys.
Bye, guys.